Well, you know, I don't know if you've had this experience much in your life, but sometimes you come across two things that are independently really good on their own, but then when you mix them together, they're even better. A couple days ago, I was at Whole Foods, and I was getting a cup of coffee before I came off the, you know, got on the bridge to come over to the North Shore. And I don't know if anybody's seen this. It's called Moe's Bacon Bar. It's a chocolate bar with smoked bacon in it. Sound delicious. And I thought, man, smoked bacon covered in chocolate, that's crazy enough that I got to try it. Are we working there? We working? Okay. So I tried it, and sure enough, it was good. Now, I had to get the little mini size because it was like $7 for a big bar. So, you know, smoked bacon and chocolate, it's an expensive commodity. But all that to say, several years ago when I was in high school, you know, probably back in 1989. Do we have anybody graduated around there? Okay. The band U2 did an album called Rattle and Hum and an accompanying movie, which kind of failed. But I've always been a big U2 fan, and I've always been a fan of the blues. And on this particular movie, they did a get-together with B.B. King, and they did a song called When Love Comes to Town. And like bacon and chocolate, I would never have mixed U2 with B.B. King, but put it together, and it worked fabulously. So tonight we're going to start off by with a little entertainment for you. So I'm going to invite Paul and Brian up here to help me out on this song.
Music made, I saw my
we'll just do a little jam session. Well, you know, I wanted to start with that song, not just because it's a fun song, but, that's really why, but this song is talking about a man who's looking back over his life, and he's got some regrets. He's done some things that he wished he hadn't done before. Anybody done some things you wish you could have had a redo, erase, rewind, try it over again? Yeah, we all have, you know? And this guy's looking back at some failed promises, some failed relationships. He's looking back at some violence, and he wished that, you know, he could change it all. But then he goes on to say, I did what I did before love came to town. And there's a hint in that song that the love he's talking about is actually Jesus Christ. And, you know, the reason we're doing the Alpha course is I believe that a lot of you, you'd like to catch that train or any train to get you from where you happen to be at this moment. So tonight we're going to do a talk called Who is Jesus? Because I don't think you can really seriously look into Christianity without beginning with the person of Jesus. And when you ask yourself, who is Jesus, that largely depends on who you're asking in our culture for the answer, doesn't it? You're going to find that people are all over the spectrum when it comes to the person of Jesus. And to illustrate this point, we've chosen a clip from a cinematic masterpiece by the name of Talladega Nights, The Ballad of Ricky Bobby, which I think should help illustrate this point. So check it out.
Dear Lord, baby Jesus, or as our brothers to the south call you, Jesus, we thank you so much for this bountiful harvest of Domino's, KFC, and the always delicious Taco Bell. I just want to take time to say thank you for my family, my two beautiful, beautiful, handsome, striking sons, Walker and Texas Ranger, or TR, as we call them. And, of course, my red-hot smoking wife, Carly, who's a stone-cold fox, who, if you were to rate her ass on 100, it would easily be a 94. Also want to thank you for my best friend and teammate, Cal Naughton Jr., who's got my back no matter what.
Shake and bake.
Dear Lord, baby Jesus, we also thank you for my wife's father, Chip. We hope that you can use your baby Jesus powers to heal him and his horrible leg. And it smells terrible, and the dogs are always bothering with it. Dear tiny infant Jesus.
You know, sweetie, Jesus did grow up. You don't always have to call him baby. It's a bit odd and off-putting to pray to a baby.
Well, look, I like the Christmas Jesus best, and I'm saying grace. When you say grace, you can say it to grown-up Jesus or teenage Jesus or bearded Jesus or whoever you want.
You know what I want? I want you to do this grace good so that God will let us win tomorrow.
Dear tiny Jesus, in your golden fleece diapers with your tiny little fat balled-up fist pawing.
He was a man. He had a beard.
Look, I like the baby version the best. Do you hear me? I win the races and I get the money.
Ricky, finish the damn grace.
I like to picture Jesus in a tuxedo t-shirt because it says, like, I want to be formal, right, but I'm here to party, too. Because I like to party, so I like my Jesus to party.
I like to picture Jesus as a ninja fighting off evil samurai.
I like to think of Jesus, like, with giant eagle's wings and singing lead vocals for Lynyrd Skynyrd with, like, an angel band. And I'm in the front row, and I'm hammered drunk.
Hey, Cal, why don't you just shut up?
Yes, ma'am.
Okay. Dear 8-pound, 6-ounce, newborn infant Jesus, don't even know a word yet, just a little infant, so cuddly, but still omnipotent. We just thank you for all the races I've won and the $21.2 million. Woo!
Woo!
Woo! Ow!
Love that money that I have accrued over this past season. Also due to a binding endorsement contract that stipulates I mentioned Powerade at each grace, I just want to say that Powerade is delicious, and it cools you off on a hot summer day. And we look forward to Powerade's release of Mystic Mountain Blueberry. Thank you for all your power and your grace, dear baby God. Amen.
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 Let's dig in.
Yeah, they kind of beat me on the length of grace tonight. 8-pound, 5-ounce baby Jesus with your powers to win races. Who is Jesus, really? Well, as you can see on that clip, that's kind of a funny clip, but I really think it's funny because there are so many different answers in our culture. You know, there was once a Russian dictionary which said that Jesus was just simply a mythical figure who never really existed, but no serious historian would ever take that approach because there's way too much evidence to the contrary that Jesus actually existed as a person in history. A great deal of the evidence that exists comes not only in the New Testament, but in other historical books. There were the books by Roman historians Tacitus and Suetonius, and even the Jewish historian Josephus. Josephus said it like this. He said, "Now there was about this time Jesus, a wise man, if it be lawful to call him a man, for he was a doer of wonderful works, a teacher of such men as received the truth with pleasure. He drew over to him both many of the Jews and many of the Gentiles. He was the Christ, and when Pilate, at the suggestion of the principal men amongst us, had condemned him to the cross, those that loved him at first did not forsake him, for he appeared to them alive again the third day, as the divine prophets had foretold these and 10,000 other wonderful things concerning him. And the tribe of Christians so named after him are not extinct to this day." So this is Josephus. He wasn't even a Christian. He was just a Jewish historian, and he wrote about Jesus as well. And the evidence just doesn't stop there. Of course, the New Testament is filled with, you know, Jesus is kind of important there in the New Testament. And so some of you may be thinking, well, okay, yeah, so what, the New Testament, it talks about Jesus. How do we know that the New Testament's even reliable? I mean, how do we know that any history book is reliable? Did anybody ever have to take any history classes in your life? Anybody? I think we all did. Okay, some of you just aren't listening. I loved history so much that I majored in history over here at SLU. I wish I could say it was LSU, but and so these are a couple of the books that I had to study. We took Greek philosophy, so I had Herodotus and Thucydides. We actually thought of naming our last child Thucydides, but, you know, thought that'd be a little weird. But how do I know these books that I'm studying in the university, how do we know that these are even accurate books? How do you know that anything you read in history was accurate? And for that matter, how many of y'all even cared when you were in history? Well, it's kind of important when we take it to the New Testament, to the Bible. You know, there's actually a science that helps determine the historical accuracy of certain documents and the authenticity. It's called textual criticism. And basically the deal is the modern history books that we read in class were based on older sources. And textual criticism is basically the science of determining how valid these things are. And it basically comes down to this. The more copies that you have of a certain text that say the same thing, the greater the chance of them being authentic, the more that they are authentic. And also, the more the closer a copy is to the date the actual event happened, the higher the chance that it's authentic. So the New Testament has been subjected to the same kinds of science as our historical records, and the same tests determine the credibility of the history that we've learned. And you've all got a book here. It says Life on the front of it. This is our gift to you. Not only did we give you red beans and rice, but you get a book to take home. This is just your study book. So I know some of y'all are tempted to jump ahead, but look on page 11 there in your book, and there's a little table there, which actually has these two books that I'm talking about. Thucydides, History of the Peloponnesian Wars. Anybody see the movie 300? Yeah, okay. It's slightly based on this. Yeah. Herodotus. Well, these guys, according to this table here, they wrote their stuff in the mid-400s BC. The earliest copies that historians have been able to find of these texts were from 900 AD. So that means that you're looking at 1,300 years between when the stuff was written and the copies that have been available. And of these two books, they've only been able to find eight copies of them from 900 AD. So the youngest copies they can find, 900 AD. And yet, these two books here are standard history books. Nobody doubts their validity. Now, if we apply that same textual criticism to the Bible, you can see other things in there. Tacitus, Caesar's Gallic War, Livy's Roman History. But you look at the New Testament. It was written around AD 40 to 100. The first copies of manuscripts came on the scene at 130 AD, and the first full manuscripts at 350 AD. What does this mean? This means there was only 300 years between when the things were written down, between when they actually occurred and when they were written down. And there were over 5,000 copies in Greek, just in Greek, 10,000 in Latin, and 9,300 in other. So if you compare the time gap and the number of copies of historical books, which no one would doubt, versus the gap in number of copies of the New Testament stands alone. I mean, if you're judging it by historical criteria, it's about as good of an example of something as you can get. So, okay, that proves maybe Jesus was an actual real person. There is lots of people who've seen him, whether Christians, whether outside of the church. We know that he lived, but who is he? Everyone knows Jesus was a human being, but was Jesus more than a human being? Was he more than just a good teacher? Was he more than just a prophet? Was he just a man, or was he something or someone else? And again, it depends on who you ask. You may have read Dan Brown's The Da Vinci Code. Dan Brown, in that book, kind of fundamental to the whole plot line is that Jesus was a good moral teacher, maybe a prophet. He was a good guy. Wasn't God, though. So Dan Brown doesn't really think Jesus was anything other than a really good guy. But you can look at Bono, the lead singer of U2, who inspired our song tonight, and he actually believes that Jesus was the Son of God, no matter how strange it sounds. And Ricky Bobby, well, he thinks that Jesus is still an 8.5-pound baby with certain omnipotent powers to help you win a race. See, lots of people say lots of things when it comes to the person of Jesus. And I got to tell you, to speak with those people who call themselves Christians but don't really know who he is, it can be a little disappointing over the years. You know, sometimes people ask, they ask me, you know, why do you follow Christ? Or how do you follow Christ? Is it like following Confucius or Buddha or Muhammad or Rush Limbaugh or Bill Clinton? Is it like being a Trekkie? Well, I guess that depends where you go. But the sad thing is that oftentimes people don't know why they're following Christ. Maybe they've just grown up in a family where that's just what you're supposed to do. And they just follow blindly, not knowing why they call themselves Christians. And to illustrate this, we're going to look at the side screen to watch another clip that demonstrates just how easy it is to get caught up in following something blindly.
That day, for no particular reason, I decided to go for a little run. So I ran to the end of the road. And when I got there, I thought maybe I'd run to the end of town.
President Carter, suffering from heat exhaustion, fell into the arms of...
And when I got there, I thought maybe I'd just run across Greenbow County. And I figured since I run this far, maybe I'd just run across the great state of Alabama. And that's what I did. I ran clear across Alabama. For no particular reason, I just kept on going. I ran clear to the ocean. And when I got there, I figured since I'd gone this far, might as well turn around, just keep on going. When I got to another ocean, I figured since I'd gone this far, Might as well just turn back. Keep right on going. When I got tired, I slept. When I got hungry, I ate. When I had to go, you know, I went.
And so you just ran.
Yeah. I'd think a lot about Mama and Bubba and Lieutenant Dane. But most of all, I thought about Jenny. I thought about her a lot.
For more than 2 years now, a man named Forrest Gump, a gardener from Greenbow, Alabama, stopping only to sleep, has been running across America. Charles Cooper brings us this report.
For the fourth time on his journey across America, Forrest Gump, the gardener from Greenbow, Alabama, is about to cross the Mississippi River again today.
I'll be damned.
Sir, Forrest? Where are you running?
Why are you running?
Are you doing this for world peace?
Are you doing this for the homeless?
Are you running for women's rights?
Or for the environment?
Or for animals?
They just couldn't believe that somebody would do all that running for no particular reason.
Why are you doing this?
I just felt like running.
I just felt like running.
It's you. I can't believe it's really you.
Now, for some reason, what I was doing seemed to make sense to people.
I mean, it was like an alarm went off in my head, you know? I said, here's a guy that's got his act together. Here's somebody who's got it all figured out. Here's somebody who has the answer. I'll follow you anywhere, Mr. Gump.
So, I got company. And after that, I got more company. And then, even more people joined in. Somebody later told me it gave people hope. Nah, I don't know anything about that, but some of those people asked me if I could help them out.
Hey, man! Hey, listen, I was wondering if you might help me, huh? Listen, I'm in the bumper sticker business, and I've been trying to think up a good slogan, and since you have been such a big inspiration to the people around here, I thought you might be able to help me jump into... Whoa, man, you just ran through a big pile of dog shit!
It happens.
What, shit?
Sometimes. And some years later, I heard that fella did come up with a bumper sticker slogan, and he made a lot of money off of it. Another time, I was running along. Somebody who had lost all his money in the T-shirt business, and he wanted to put my face on a T-shirt, but he couldn't draw that well, and he didn't have a camera.
Here, use this one. Nobody likes that color anyway.
Have a nice day. Well, some years later, I found out that that man did come up with an idea for a T-shirt. He made a lot of money off of it. Anyway, like I was saying, I had a lot of company. My mom always said, you got to put the past behind you before you can move on. And I think that's what my running was all about. I had run for 3 years, 2 months, 14 days, and 16 hours.
Quiet, he's gonna say something.
I'm pretty tired. I think I'll go home now.
Now what are we supposed to do?
And just like that, my running days was over.
The guy comes up to Forrest and says, "You've inspired me, man. I'll follow you anywhere you go." And then 3 years later, I don't feel like running anymore. Okay, I'm pretty lousy at Forrest Gump accents. But what are we supposed to do now? They were blindly following him. They didn't know why. Well, you know what? Christianity is not a blind leap of faith, but a reasonable step of faith based on the life of Jesus Christ. And so the question that got us to this point is there any evidence to support the claim that he is more than just a good man or an influential religious figure? Is there any evidence? Well, I think we need to start with, what did Jesus have to say about himself? What did he think he was? Because if Jesus didn't think he was more than a man or a prophet or a teacher, then there's no point in us trying to make him into something else, is there? Some say that Jesus never claimed to actually be God. However, when we look at what he had to say, it becomes obvious that he was conscious of being a man whose identity was God. And this is huge. See, Jesus is teaching centered on himself. You know, you look at most religious teachers, and they're always saying, "Hey, don't look at me, look at God." But Jesus said, "You want to know what God looks like? Look at me." His teaching centered on himself. You know, the human heart longs for something more than possessions and power and pleasure. And it's a deep hunger, and I think we've all felt that at some point. And a lot of really smart people from the world of psychology have tried to grapple with what is this core desire, this core hunger at the inside of human beings. Sigmund Freud put it out to be a hunger for love. Carl Jung said that it was a hunger for security. Alfred Adler said it was a hunger for significance. Jesus just said, "Hey, people are hungry, and I am the bread of life. I'm the thing that's really going to feed and satiate that hunger in the core of people." To those who are in dark and depression and despair, Jesus says, "I am the light. Those who walk with me shall never walk in the dark again." To those who are fearful of death, Jesus says, "I am the resurrection. Believe in me and even live when you die." Those who are worried, anxious, and ridden with guilt, Jesus says, "Come to me, all you who are weary, and you'll find rest for your soul." He said that in Matthew 11:28. Don't know who to follow? Jesus says, "Follow me." Mark 1:17. Jesus makes the claim often that receiving him equals receiving God. Welcoming him equals welcoming God. You know, there was a little girl one time that was sitting on the floor with some crayons drawing a picture, and her mom came up. She said, "Honey, what are you drawing?" She said, "I'm drawing a picture of God." She's like, "Dear, nobody knows what God looks like." And she said, "Well, they will when I get done." Jesus was saying, "You want to know what God looks like? Look at me. You want to know what God is like? You want to know his character? Hang around me." His teaching centered on himself. Now, Jesus, there were many indirect claims and direct claims to being God, and I want to look at a few of the indirect ones. First one can be found in Mark chapter 2, verse 5. There's an instance where a paralyzed man is brought to Jesus. Jesus was at a house, and he was healing all kinds of people, all kinds of diseases and stuff, and some guys show up with their paralyzed friend on a mat, and they can't even get in the house because there's so many people. So they went up on the roof and cut a hole in it and lowered this guy down. And Jesus heals the guy. But in the process of healing the guy, he says, "Your sins are forgiven." And the religious people sitting around there, they got really offended because when Jesus was saying that, that was making him equal with God, because only God can forgive sins. Now, let's say when tonight is over, Zach comes up to me and he's really mad because he's a U2 fan, and he's like, dude, you obliterated that song earlier, and he punches me in the nose, gives me a bloody nose, and walks off. And then say Steve over here comes up to Zach and say, hey, look, Zach, I forgive you for what you did to Crispin. Be a little odd, huh? Right? Especially if I'm in the room. I'd be feeling like, Steve, what, huh? What are you thinking? See, sin is against God. So who does Jesus think that he is? Jesus actually behaves as if he is the offended party. And that only makes sense if he were God. He also, in Matthew 25:31-32, he claimed that he would one day sit on the throne and judge all. He would render judgment and then execute sentencing. He would decide what happens to every person. What if I said that to you guys? What if I said that, hey, the next 10 weeks, I'm going to, you know, figure out what happens to you guys based on how you treat me in Alpha, you know? And Zach, who punches me in the nose, he's going to be in trouble. That'd be pretty ridiculous, wouldn't it? It'd be preposterous. See, even those not believing in God would agree that only God could do that if there was a God. Okay, those are some of the indirect claims, but let's look at some of the direct claims that Jesus made. In Mark 14:61-64, a high priest asked Jesus, are you the Christ? And Jesus says, I am. The Christ was basically the Messiah, the one who was going to come and set things right. And then in John 20:28, there's a story about, have you ever heard the term doubting Thomas? Well, where this came from was Thomas, one of his disciples, after Jesus had allegedly resurrected from the dead, he showed up, and Thomas was like, dude, you're a ghost. And Jesus said, no, I'm not a ghost. Come up. You don't believe me? Doubting Thomas, come up and, touch the scars. Touch the scar on my side. Touch the scar in my hands. And so Thomas does that, and then he says, my Lord, my God. And what's interesting is Jesus doesn't try to correct him. Jesus doesn't say, oh, wait, hey, dude, I'm just a man. He doesn't try to correct him. What's interesting, we can look throughout the Bible, and there's many encounters that people had on occasions with angels, and they would often try to worship an angel and say, you know, bow down, and the angel would often tell him, dude. Well, the angel probably wouldn't say dude, but so it was a Californian angel. But but the angel would say, don't get off the ground. Don't worship me. Worship God. But Jesus, he doesn't say that. He doesn't try to correct him. He doesn't say, hey, he doesn't correct Thomas at all, because he believes he's God. And in John 10:30-33, he says this, I and the Father are one. And again, the Jews picked up rocks to throw at him. And Jesus said, I've made a present to you from the Father of a great many good actions. For which of these acts are you going to stone me? And they replied, we're not trying to stone you for any of the good things you did. They didn't deny that he did a lot of good things. But for what you said, this blasphemy of calling yourself God. See, they were going to stone him because he had said he was God. Well, you may be thinking, okay, so he said he was God. Man, there's all kinds of people that make all kinds of crazy claims in this world. You can go out to Las Vegas, and there's a lot of people walking around saying they're Elvis. They even look like Elvis. They even talk like Elvis, but they're not Elvis. You can go down to your local mental institution, and there's people who think they're Superman or Napoleon or a poached egg. But that doesn't... but that doesn't mean that they are, right? Well, there are only three real possibilities here. Jesus was a lunatic. He was wrong, but he didn't know it. He was just delusional. He was a crazy man. He was wrong, but he didn't know it. Or two, he was a liar. He was wrong, and he knew it, which makes him an evil person that was just trying to manipulate people and all that. Or else three, he was Lord. He was actually God. What he said about himself, he said he is God. Well, what evidence is there to support what he said? Well, I want to just look at a few aspects here. Number one, his teaching. His teaching is widely acknowledged to be the greatest ever. Love your enemies. Forgive others. Do unto others as you would have them do unto you. You ever had your parents tell you that growing up? Give to those who ask. Don't judge. See, his teaching is the basis for much of the law in civilized world to this day. So advanced that these laws have not been improved upon for moral living for centuries. You know, there's actually a guy named an atheist by the name of John Mortimer, and he leads a group called Atheists for Christ. Crazy sounding group, huh? Leads a group called Atheists for Christ, and he said this when asked about what caused him to change his stance on the person of Jesus. And he said this: seeing the impact of a society which has rejected God and Christian ethics, what is evident is that the Gospels provide a system of ethics to which we must return if we are to avoid social disaster. And this comes from an article he wrote entitled, Unbelievers Should Go to Church. Interesting. Would a man with these kind of teachings be mad? Would he be bad? Or would he be God? Lunatic, liar, or Lord? Okay, well, those are his teachings. What about his works? Well, maybe your experience with Christianity has been that it's kind of boring, kind of like the Mr. Bean video we saw last weekend. And you're like, it's just kind of boring. Well, the Christianity we see with Jesus was white hot. It was crazy on fire. I mean, you would probably want to go to a wedding where Jesus was at. The first miracle that Jesus ever does that's recorded was when he shows up at a wedding and he turns water into wine. Not just like Mad Dog or Strawberry Hill or, you know, the cheap stuff. He turns it into such good wine that the people there are like, wait a second. You're supposed to save the best stuff for last. Who would like to go to a wedding with Jesus? What about going to the hospital? Everywhere Jesus went, he was healing people of the sickness and diseases that were tormenting them. How about going fishing? Jesus was known to do a couple of fishing miracles as well. People in Louisiana would have loved him. Going to a picnic. You wouldn't even have to bring lunch. Or maybe just one lunch, and he'd make a lot out of it. Or how about going to a funeral? A number of recorded instances in the Gospels where Jesus actually raised people from the dead. Crazy, evil, or God? How about his character? Is there anyone else like Jesus? Attractive, magnetic, full of life and joy and compassion, unselfish without self-pity, humility without weakness. See, I don't care how many pictures you've seen of Jesus, paintings that kind of make him this weak, pale-faced, you know, pseudo-hippie, new age-looking kind of guy that you wouldn't want to have your back in a fight. Jesus was not that. He was humility without weakness. Joy, but not at other people's expense. Kindness, but not indulgence. Enemies found no fault in him. Friends said he was without sin. And under pressure, Jesus actually forgave the very people that were crucifying him. Wow. You know, a couple of years ago in Time magazine, Every so often, Time magazine still runs a expose on the person of Jesus. And they had a story on Jesus, and it ended with this quote. Jesus is the most persistent symbol of purity, selflessness and love in the history of humanity. Jesus is the most persistent symbol of purity, selflessness and love in the history of humanity. And again, that same prominent atheist that I quoted a minute ago said again, if Jesus had not existed, the church would not have invented him. Mad, bad, or God? And then there's the fulfillment of prophecy aspect. You know, Jesus didn't just arrive as some, you know, kind of religious person without a context. He actually emerged in a story that had been going on for a while. You know, over 500 years, as recorded in the Old Testament, there were 300 prophecies that were spoken about a person who would come to begin setting things right. And Jesus fulfilled 29 of these prophecies in one day. And not just the easy ones either. I mean, it's pretty hard for a con man to be born in the right place and then to die in the right place, in the right way, and then be buried in the right place, and then come back to life from the dead. And all of that evidence really comes down to this one thing, the resurrection, the cornerstone, that Jesus was the only man to do this. You know, if I told you that next week I was going to die, but hey, don't worry, because after the funeral, a few days later, I'm going to raise from the dead, and then I actually did come back from the dead, you'd probably pretty much pay attention to anything else I'd said in my life up to that point, right? All of a sudden, all those crazy things I've been telling you, you'd start maybe paying attention to them. Now, some say that Jesus, the resurrection, was actually a myth. Some explain it away with various theories. There's the theory that Jesus didn't exactly die. He went up on the cross, but they took him down before he was dead, and he kind of got, you know, recuperated for a few days and then appeared to some of his disciples. But the only problem with that theory is that Roman soldiers were the ones who crucified him. If you ever looked into history at all, Romans were pretty good at killing people. They were really one of the most brutal empires that ever existed. They actually invented crucifixion. And they crucified thousands and thousands of people. These Roman soldiers carried out the flogging and the crucifixion, and they knew when someone was dead because their own lives depended on it. It depended on getting that right. So, as we sang in the song earlier, it talks about, I threw the dice when they pierced his side. The Roman soldiers pierced the side of Jesus. And what does the New Testament talk about? It talks about blood and water flowed out of that. Now, medical people today know that this is an indication of death. Because when you die, the very things that make up your blood begin to separate. The serum from the clot. And so the way that would come out would be like blood and water. So Jesus, you know, the theory that he didn't actually die, pretty weak. The other theory is that the disciples stole his body and started a rumor that Jesus was alive. Theory. It's a lot of dashes between words. Well, you know what? Depressed and disillusioned people would need more than a lie to suffer and die. See, the reality is, these same disciples, if they were just lying about this, why would every one of them, years later, many years later, be martyred for a lie, for something they knew was a lie? Then there's the theory that the authorities stole the body, but, you know, the reality is that the authorities could have produced the body anytime the rumors started flying. The immediate effect of the resurrection was that it had a dramatic impact on the world. A guy by the name of Michael Green wrote this. He said, "Church, beginning from a handful of uneducated fishermen and tax gatherers, swept across the whole known world in the next 300 years, It's a perfectly amazing story of a peaceful revolution that has no parallel in the history of the world. It came about because Christians were able to say to inquirers, Jesus did not only die for you, he is alive. You can actually meet him and discover for yourself the reality we are talking about. They did and joined the church, and the church, born from that Easter grave, spread everywhere. The Christian experience around the world and through the ages is evidence. People of every tribe, color, nationality, socioeconomic status, all unite in the common experience of the risen Christ. You know, it's a man was proclaiming to some friends one day about the fact that he believed Jesus was not dead but very much alive. And one of his friends said, how can you be so sure? He said, well, because I just spoke with him a few minutes ago. Reality is millions today have that same experience on a daily basis. See, when it comes down to it, we have three possibilities. Only three. Lunatic, liar, or Lord. The fictional yet wise Sherlock Holmes once said this: when you have eliminated the impossible, whatever remains, however improbable, must be the truth. The whole weight of Jesus' teaching, his works, his character, the fulfillment of prophecy, and his conquest of death make those suggestions of being mad or bad seem doubtful at best, but they do lend support to his being a man whose identity was God. C.S. Lewis, who had once been a devout atheist, who turned out to be one of the most famous Christian writers, at least of the last century, he wrote this: a man who was merely a man and said the sorts of things Jesus said would not be a great moral teacher. He would either be a lunatic on the level with a man who says he's a poached egg, or else he would be the devil of hell. You must make your choice. Either this man was and is the Son of God, or else a madman or something worse. But let us not come up with any patronizing nonsense about his being a great human teacher. He has not left that open to us. He did not intend to. Don't follow blindly, because that's not what God wants. Hear him, believe him, follow him. I want us to investigate this tonight and engage our head and our hearts in the search. So tonight we're going to have, you know, we're going to close with some dessert. We have some strawberry shortcake and some coffee and woohoo. Get excited. And we're going to take about a 10-minute break, 5-minute break, so you can have restroom break and get some dessert. And then we're going to sit down and have a discussion at the table on the talk tonight. So what? Oh, yeah, yeah. And before we get started, this will be our first discussion tonight. So here are the ground rules. Number one, there are no stupid questions, okay? This means yet. All right, you got to agree. No put-downs of others here or outside. I understand that some of you here, you may have had a bad experience with church, a certain brand of church, or maybe even with a certain religion. And we don't mind you sharing your experience, but let's try to keep it in kind of generic terms. I don't want you saying, oh, man, then, you know, dang, Baptist, you know, or them, you know, Mormons or Catholics or Muslims or whatever. You know, let's just be generic. If you had a bad experience, you can kind of, because we don't want to offend each other here. And then third rule is you don't have to talk, okay? And some of y'all are breathing a sigh of relief right now. Oh. And for those of you who really like talking, you don't have to keep talking, okay? So, and you will be reminded of that sometimes as well. And then the final rule is one person at a time talking, okay? All right, y'all are easy. So let's come up to the table, to the bar, and you can grab some dessert, grab some coffee, and then we'll get the discussion going here in about five or so minutes. Thank y'all.